Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we're watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, we are on Season 2, Episode 13, entitled Armageddon Game. This episode first aired January 30th, 1994. Before we get into this episode, anything you want to talk about from the previous podcast?
No, it was perfect.
Well, it was called The Alternate, that episode. I don't think we ever talked about why it had that title.
Yeah, that did seem like a strange title.
Yeah, I don't know what was an alternate to what. Do you think it was because they'd found an alternate life form for the Doctor to focus on and obsess about?
And then killed it? Terrible people.
I don't know. I guess I should have Googled why they called it that.
Before we start, I will say, I actually do not remember ever watching this episode.
Oh, maybe you never saw it.
Or just forgettable?
We haven't had a lot of truly memorable episodes in Season 2, at least not since the opening three-parter.
Nothing as good as Dramatis Personae.
No. All right, well, let's get into this episode.
Okay.
We open here with a supplemental log by Dr. Bashir, who is on an away mission with Chief O'Brien. They're on board a T'Lani cruiser, helping the T'Lani and Kalarans eliminate their stockpiles of harvesters, which are deadly biomechanical gene disruptors used by both sides in their centuries-long war.
That's a really cool-looking ship, by the way.
It was. These two aliens are very interesting. One is wearing all brown and has crazy hair that stands up on each side of their head like the boss in Dilbert. That's who it reminded me of.
Oh my gosh, I forgot. And I'm not even exaggerating. Yes, they do.
Yes.
It is definitely a big hair episode.
Yeah, because the other aliens are dressed in a kind of dark purple or dark lavender, and they also have some serious hair game where it sort of goes straight up in the middle of their heads.
So I assume this centuries-long war is around which haircut is preferable.
Maybe.
Hair does seem to feature big in their society.
Man, it is a big hair episode. In this opening scene, they say that they are on attempt number 375 to neutralize the harvesters. They take this tube of red liquid and they drop it down into a machine and then they bring it back out. On this attempt, it comes out green, which seems to excite everyone. They check and double check and it seems like it's finally worked. Then in comes one of the aliens in the lavender outfit when he hears everybody cheering. This is Ambassador Sherratt, who seems very happy they found a way to eliminate the weapons.
Very happy.
He says he knew if they worked together, they'd be able to do it.
Did you notice in this how Miles is just sitting, leaning back in his chair, having a drink? He seems to be enjoying this whole thing.
Well, he doesn't have to do much, right? He's mostly just watching. He's working on the computer.
He's definitely very relaxed.
Yeah, he's chilling. The doctor in the brown uniform says, let's not forget our Federation helpers. And the ambassador says they questioned bringing in outside help at first, but it was obviously the right thing to do. Then he says, we have to eliminate the harvesters and wipe out all the data so it's not recreated ever again. Miles says he's been purging all the data, so if anyone wants to do it again, they'll have to start from scratch. But now they have to destroy the entire supply of harvesters, which is walls and walls of these red tubes. The music is ominous to let you know all these red tubes are bad. And then we cue the theme song.
I thought they missed a chance here when they showed the wall of all the red tubes with the bioweapons in it. They should have had one leaking, just, you know, one dripping stuff down. That would have been awesome.
That probably would have been bad in that little confined room.
Plus, from where Miles was on the station, he purged all the files. Don't they keep off-site backups?
Yeah, are really all the files right there on this cruiser? Which is only one of the aliens, right? This is the T'Lani cruiser?
Yeah.
That was questionable.
Don't they back them up to like a, you know, a hard disk? I would say tape, but we're in the 21st century now.
On this show, it's a data clip. They're always talking about data clips on this show.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, they put it on an SD card somewhere.
Well, the only thing I can imagine is that they had some kind of a VPN hookup back to the headquarters of both of these aliens.
Ah.
That's my only guess.
Meanwhile, some Ukrainian hackers have all the files.
Oh, Lord. Well, maybe as part of this, they actually went to the different planets. I don't know. It's questionable that he's deleting everything remotely, but yeah, that's what they said. All right, after the theme, Miles and Bashir call Sisko to tell him they've had success, and Bashir says it was a team effort, but Miles points out that it was the doctor's idea of using muon rays, which I had to write that one down because muon rays, that's a good term.
They involve cows, I think.
Yeah, moo. Miles wants to come home, but there is a celebration planned for tonight on Talani Prime, and Sisko and Bashir thinks they should go. Miles says, well, another day won't kill me, which that's never a good thing to say on a TV show. And Julian says, that's the spirit.
I think that's called tempting fate.
That is definitely tempting fate on TV.
But we do see some progress for Bashir here. He's crediting the team and not really being full of himself. So
yes,
we're seeing more of that improvement in the writing of the character.
Yeah, he didn't say, oh, I impressed myself with how smart I was.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because remember, I remember the later Julian
yes,
rather than the earlier one.
And so far, this is the only Julian I know, and he's been incredibly annoying.
Indeed.
We go back to the lab, and they give Bashir the honor of neutralizing the last of the red tubes. So they went through those tubes pretty fast. I thought this was going to take days, but apparently not.
Yeah.
The brown uniform doctor says, it's ironic that the war comes to an end above Talani 3, a planet whose entire population was decimated by the harvesters. I hope this will be a lasting peace. But uh-oh, in come some dudes in purple outfits with guns and exceedingly tall hair, and they immediately shoot the crazy hair doctor guy. Everybody ducks. Someone tries to shoot Julian. Just as he seems to be trying to finish off the last of the harvester destruction, I couldn't tell if he pressed the button or not pressed the button.
I thought he did.
He must have, because at the beginning, it was still sort of up above the table.
Yeah.
But when they actually shot the table, it had gone down into it. So I guess it was done and destroyed.
Plus, you see Julian's no dummy. Soon as they start shooting, he immediately dives for cover.
Well, they both did. Everybody kind of ducked. Someone tries to shoot Julian as he seems to be finishing off the process with the last harvester. But Miles stops the dude and gets into a scuffle with him. Then Julian gets into a fight with the other guy, and the table where all the tubes were going into is shot and destroyed, sending the goo into the air, and a tiny deadly dot lands on Miles' arm, which seems really bad. And everybody at this point in the room is dead, except for Miles and Bashir. So including the terrorist people who came in, I guess I just assigned them the label of terrorists, but they're also dead.
You did get to see a lot of action, Miles, yeah, here. I guess this is where the combat training comes in useful, because he disarmed the guy,
yep,
grabbed the phaser, and then did a classic Star Trek dive and roll.
He did. It was good.
Shades of Galaxy Quest there.
The dive and roll, yeah. Miles calls the Ganges, which is the shuttle that they came on, in hopes of beaming out, but he gets no response. So instead, they beam down to the surface of the planet, carrying the guns of the attackers.
And I'd just like to point out here, this is why you don't work with your sleeves rolled up.
Gosh, that's right. I mean, it might have still soaked through the sleeve. But anyway, yes, that's exactly right. The doctor with the crazy hair in this scene is played by a guy named Larry Cedar. He's got over 200 IMDb credits, so I was surprised he was a goner in under 10 minutes. But yeah, he's gone. We don't see him again.
He was excited to be a redshirt.
Yeah, really. After the ad break, we're in Quarks, and I took note of Sisko's order because whenever he orders something specific, he never gets to eat it. I don't know if you've noticed that.
Oh, I haven't. Oh, good catch.
He ordered a cup of Alterian chowder, Udaberry crepes, which sounded interesting.
Yep.
And a slice of, but then he got interrupted, so he didn't even get to say it, because Kira calls to say the Talani and Kalaran ambassadors have arrived and they'll only speak to Sisko. So he has to cancel the order, of course.
And this is the first time in ages he's probably hasn't had to eat at the food court.
Oh, that would be me. I'd be as disappointed as he was. I would always have very specific things that I liked, and I'd be very disappointed when I didn't get those things. So I feel his pain.
That is true.
It is. Now we go to Sisko's office, and we've got the ambassador from earlier, along with an ambassador from the other side. I mean, oh man, the hair is hysterical in this scene. The purple guy's hair goes straight up in the air. It's not that high. It's this guy's maybe only 4 or 5 inches. The guys,
yeah,
with the guns, I mean, it was like a foot tall.
Yeah. This show takes hair seriously.
It's pretty funny. And then the other person, who is a woman, she's the one in the brown uniform. She has got the full-on Dilbert boss hair. I mean, she could literally be cosplaying the boss if she had a tie on. It's ridiculous.
It was rather funny.
It is, but I don't know. She pulls it off. So they're telling Sisko a fabricated story that Miles tripped a security device and there was a terrible accident.
So you know somebody is up to no good.
Yes. Sisko is very upset that his officers are dead, and they obviously don't know that Miles and Bashir escaped. But there is some kind of joint thing going on here between the two of them where they've killed off all of their best scientists and are now covering it up.
So you think the other ambassador was involved too at this point?
At this point, I thought they were both involved because it was very suspicious, yes.
Ah, Okay. I wasn't sure because it seemed to be Sherratt was leading the tall tale and had the video file with the accident. I was thinking it was just him.
And he was the one who was there, obviously. And she wasn't.
Yes. And she says how he left the ship just moments before the accident.
Yeah. Lucky.
Very convenient.
They give Sisko a recording of the incident, which is obviously not going to be what really happened. Sisko looks pretty upset, as you would expect.
Oh, he does that grim, serious look.
Yeah.
I love it when he does that.
The ambassadors say they are grateful for the help in getting rid of the harvesters. Then they leave, and Sisko looks at the recording device, or the data clip, as we'll call it again later. Just a quick note here about the actors playing these two characters. The Kelleran ambassador is played by Peter White, who is tough to recognize in this makeup, but he's a very seasoned actor with a lot of IMDb credits. The Talani ambassador, the one with the Dilbert hair, is played by Darlene Carr, a Golden Globe nominee, who has many credits on IMDb, including voiceover credits. For example, you can hear her on the original Jungle Book movie.
Oh, wow.
And also, she does some voiceover singing work in The Sound of Music, dubbing some of the high notes of Kurt Von Trapp, which is pretty funny.
Oh,
that's a funny little nugget. Yeah. But it looks like she stopped acting in 99, as there's just no credits after that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Just wanted to shout out to the quality guest stars again.
Once again, yeah. When they were doing the casting, did they just go through Golden Globe winners or nominees and go, we'll pull that in.
Yeah, then.
See if they're available.
They'll do. We go back to the planet, and Bashir and Miles are sneaking around some old abandoned structures. Julian finds some medical supplies, which Miles scans for booby traps before he opens them.
Definitely useful having the combat vet.
Yep.
He knows what he's doing.
Miles is trying to understand why the Kellerans, which are the purple guys, would wait until the harvesters were destroyed before making a move and breaking the treaty. Julian loads up on the rations and supplies and wants to get moving, but Miles thinks it's safer if they stay put and wait for Sisko to come and find them.
Mostly because moving around would mean more sets and would be more expensive, and they used the special effects budget up in the spacecraft and fight sequence.
Well, I think you are correct. So they look around the structure some more and find an old comm system. Miles thinks he can fix it, and then they can call the Talani for help, which doesn't seem like a great idea, but they don't know that. They just know the purple guys attacked, which are the other ones.
Yeah, that's worth pointing out. The two guys who did all the shooting, they were Kellerans.
Yep, right. Julian says he thinks he can help fix the comm system because he took some extension courses at Starfleet Medical. But an exasperated Miles says, just let me do my job. More examples of these two just not really able to get along. Now we go to Sisko's office, and Sisko, Dax, Kira, and Odo are watching the recording. It seems to be a combination of events from right before the attack and from the previous day. So we get to this point where it's a thing that we never saw, which is Miles saying there's something unexpected running, and they try to shut it down, and then zap, they all disappear, which is awfully convenient.
Yep. And Miles was sitting drinking his coffee.
Yes. It's very obvious, this thing with Miles and his coffee cup. Odo says he's heard of weapons like that, where a radiation pulse vaporizes intruders. Kira is surprised that Miles didn't detect it. And Dax says it must have been buried very deep in the system.
Please don't talk about computers.
Why do we keep burying stuff deep in systems? Oh my God, it's so funny. So silly.
Why doesn't anybody check for stuff buried deep in the system?
And they always give Dax these ridiculous lines.
Yeah.
I'd be more likely to believe that the computer was an AI and it decided to zap everyone for making these stupid weapons. That would be more believable than things buried deep in the system.
Yeah, exactly.
In the dark web.
Oh, good one.
Kira and Odo want to question the security officer for that ship, but Sisko has gone into cold mode. He says to contact Bajor and get a temporary doctor until Starfleet can send a replacement. Then he tells Dax to inform Starfleet. Dax offers to go with him to tell Keiko, but he says he'll do it himself. He also says they'll have a memorial service the next day, and then he dismisses everyone. Didn't you feel like they gave up awfully fast? I mean, people just disappeared on the video. Couldn't they have been transported somewhere? I mean, I was just surprised how easily we gave up on the people in the video, and it just moved on.
I think it might be because they didn't have any suspicions. Maybe the Talani and Kellerans are close with the Federation, so they didn't have any suspicion. They've been very honest, so there was no reason to doubt the recording.
Maybe because they came together with the recording,
Right, so it didn't seem like there was anything untoward.
Wasn't suspicious, but boy, it seems suspicious to me.
And I do like how Sisko does that very calm, emotionless thing. He goes into that mode.
It's that cold mode, yeah.
Yeah, he could almost be Vulcan. He's very practical. I need a new medical officer. I need a new operations officer. It's very functional.
Very Sisko. It's that sort of pragmatic, we have to carry on.
Yes, which I think works perfectly for this character.
Back on the planet, Miles is still working on the comms. Bashir is sad that they missed the party because he thinks the Talani women are hot. Very on brand for Bashir.
He digs the tall hair. I think that's the thing.
Oh, jeez. He says the celebration was going to be an adventure for him, but the most Miles could have hoped for was a good meal because he's married. This dude is so... he's just obnoxious. Miles pokes at him for not being able to think about anything other than women. And he also has disdain for his comments about marriage. He tells Bashir that one day he'll fall in love with someone and understand. Bashir says he did love someone once, but marriage doesn't seem fair to him. He says, I mean, look at us. Our lives are constantly in danger. There's enough to worry about without worrying about the wife and kids at home worrying about us. Which I agree with the sentiment. Yeah. I just don't like the reductive nature of saying wife and kids because soldiers can be women too. But anyway, that's Julian.
But shockingly, though, Julian does actually talk sense about the stress on family of being in Starfleet. It's true, they are constantly in danger, and their lives can be threatened by all sorts of things, especially the unknown. It does almost seem unfair to put a significant other or a partner through that kind of thing.
Yes, I agree. I just doubt Julian's motives. I think he just says that to justify chasing women constantly.
I go positive, you look on the negative side.
It's not my fault. When it comes to Julian, that's my job right now.
Okay.
People keep telling me he's going to get better. I'm waiting.
Okay.
But then Julian makes a tactical mistake, and he says, it's no secret that Miles' assignment to DS9 hasn't been conducive to his marriage. I wrote down, none of your business, Julian. We are not friends. Those are not my words, but I could see them on Miles' face.
My words were, duh, I think we all know that. Well, because they have arguments, loud arguments in Quarks, if you remember. I don't think there's anybody in the station who doesn't know that.
No, it's not a secret, but he already knows that he's not on Miles' best side.
Ah, that's true. That's true, yeah.
He doesn't take any cues. He's just, I don't know.
Well, I think that's part of what they're doing with the character and how the character does actually evolve.
Yeah.
At this time, he's a character who really can't spot those cues or sort of take the emotional content of what's happening and understand it. It seems like he has almost this detachment from normal human emotions.
Right. At this point, Miles doesn't have his sleeves rolled up, and then he goes and gets a blanket and puts it around himself, and this whole thing makes Julian very suspicious.
Yeah.
So he runs the tricorder on him and says he's feverish and has low blood pressure. Then he pushes up Miles' sleeve, and he sees the mark from the harvester. He's been infected, which seems pretty bad.
Yes. And if Miles had kept his sleeves rolled up, you would have seen that earlier.
That's true. Back on the station, Sisko goes to tell Keiko what happened.
Oh, I really didn't want to watch this scene.
I know. And he doesn't even have to say anything because she pretty much knows it immediately.
Well, that look on his face.
Yes.
This is an advantage of having a good actor. I mean, you see just from sort of the body language and the look on his face, it's like something really bad has happened.
Right.
I thought this was a great scene.
It was a good scene. She wants to see the recording, and then she asks him to leave so she can be alone. It was at least a nice short scene, because I don't think I could have taken too much of it. Back on the planet, Miles is getting worse. Julian tells him to sit down and talk him through the repairs. So, gee, maybe they have to work together finally.
Aren't they worried that these harvesters are contagious?
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing, and I do have a note in overanalysis about that because I'm not sure what kind of weapon this is, if it requires direct skin contact.
That's funny. We are on the same page.
Yeah. Now we go to Quarks, and Dax and Kira are drowning their sorrows. Dax says Julian gave her his medical school diaries to help her understand him, which I don't know what to think about that. That's either more of his enormous ego or it's actually him being vulnerable. I can't decide because I don't know what's in them and I don't know what to think about this, but it just seems peculiar.
My note says, is this kind of weird or creepy?
I don't know. It's weird. She says they were about his innermost thoughts, about his struggles and constant fear of failure. But she also says she's never read them. So I don't know how she knows what's in them. Maybe that's just what he told her. I'm like her, I probably wouldn't have read them.
No, or, it does seem a little bit too personal.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to read them.
No. Because it's like, oh, you'd like me if you read these. You'll see I'm deep.
Oh, God. What is he, some kind of emo band from the early zeros?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know. Read my poetry. No, thanks.
Oh.
Quark stops by the table with some free drinks to have a toast to Miles and Julian. In his toast, Quark says, they were good customers who always paid their bar bills on time. And at times like this, he's reminded of the 57th rule of acquisition. Good customers are as rare as platinum. Treasure them.
That was very just Quark. Perfect.
And the two look at him. So funny.
Yes. I can see that as a great Ferengi compliment to someone.
Yeah, he clearly thought it was a compliment.
Although I am surprised that that rule didn't also include and are a good source of profit.
Well, maybe it does. They don't always say the whole rule. Sometimes they cut it apart to make it fit the situation.
Oh, I bet Pell would be able to quote the commentaries that also include they're a good source of profit.
Yeah. Quark leaves the table and Kira and Dax clink their glasses.
I'm still amazed at the free drinks.
Yeah, they were too. Then we go to Ops and Keiko comes in asking to see Sisko urgently. She's noticed on the recording that Miles is drinking coffee, and according to the timestamp, it's late afternoon. There's no way he would be drinking coffee, she says. I wrote down, hey, it could be decaf.
Or it could be a gin or beer.
That's right.
It's scotch.
This is flimsy evidence, yeah. But at least somebody's thinking about it.
He'd been working with Julian for days, so it was pure vodka.
She is sure the recording has been tampered with. She also says that she has, I don't know how she got this. I didn't go back and re-listen to it, but she says she got the chemical readout of what was in his cup. So it appeared to be caffeine because Kira's like, maybe it's tea. And
oh, that's right.
Maybe it's something else. And she's like, oh no, it was caffeine. I'm like, okay.
They had sensor logs in there.
Mm. Sisko decides that he and Dax will head to Talani 3 to get the Ganges and see if they can find out why the recording was altered.
Now, this is the opposite of what you said earlier about how they just seem to accept this.
Yeah.
Sisko, literally at the slightest lead, just jumps into action. He's presented with some evidence that might show something, that something's not quite right. And immediately he takes steps to figure out, is something wrong here? I was really impressed with this.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like they should have had a conversation sooner about whether or not something was suspicious on that recording. But I guess they were in shock, so we could probably chalk it up to that. Yeah, I am glad he listened. She was very insistent that Miles would never do that, so it seemed wrong. At the same time, he's got to know that it's just possible that the timestamp was wrong or something simple could have happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's like, okay, let's go get the shuttle and find out.
I suppose it's due diligence.
Right. Meanwhile, Chief O'Brien is not looking good. Julian is still trying to fix the comm system with his instructions.
Very sweaty Miles.
Miles asks to hear more about the woman Bashir was almost in love with. It's not a super critical story, but he said she was a ballet dancer and she was gorgeous and graceful. He thought he'd found the perfect woman.
As Dax pointed out, shallow and submissive.
Oh, Lord. Her father offered him a job, but he would have had to leave Starfleet to take it, and he chose not to do that, so he left her behind.
So he actually did give up, theoretically, quite a lot for Starfleet.
I don't know. Sure.
Well, he said that he could have been the head of surgery in 5 years.
That's true.
Clearly, this guy recognized Julian was maybe a very good doctor or an excellent surgeon.
Right.
Also, he'd met someone that he really liked, and he was prepared to leave all that behind for Starfleet.
Right. Well, he manages to get power back to the comms panel, but it's not transmitting just yet, so more sciencey stuff happens. Miles tries to get up to help, but he can't, saying he can't feel his legs, which seems pretty bad, and we go to an ad break.
Why were they using RF when they were trying to communicate on subspace?
Oh, does he say something about RF?
Yeah.
Maybe it's RF, though, internally to something in the room or something in the panel.
Oh, RF to a relay and then...
Yeah, something in the town.
That then goes to subspace. Okay, I'll accept that.
I could be a comms officer.
You could write this stuff.
Maybe. Dax and Sisko arrive at the Talani cruiser to get their runabout. They call the Talani ambassador and say they want to see where the accident took place. Crazy hair woman agrees. Sisko heads to the cruiser and Dax says she's going to beam over to the Ganges and look around. Then we go back down to the planet, and the dramatic music is getting louder as Miles is fading. Julian finally gets the comms working, and he sends out a distress signal, hoping the Talani will rescue them. That seems like they didn't think things out very carefully, but anyway, that's where we are.
Well, they're working on the assumption that the Talani are not the aggressive party in this.
Yes.
So Bashir starts sending out a distress signal.
Yes.
Maybe he can't communicate with the Ganges. I would think you'd first thing you want to do is communicate with the Ganges and say, beam you on board.
Beam you on board or send a signal to Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, relay it saying, they tried to kill us.
Right, especially when you were working together with the two races.
Yeah.
At that point, you have to fall back to your own team and say, somebody come and help us here.
Yeah, we're not sure who to trust.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
I don't think they're thinking super clearly. I suppose the shock a little bit of the attack and seeing everybody get killed in front of them threw them off a bit. And then Miles is obviously not able to think clearly as he's quite ill.
And yeah, and Julian's not well known for thinking clearly.
That is so true. Well, in their chat here, as Miles thinks he's dying, he says, Julian is wrong about marriage. It's like the greatest adventure of all. It's full of pitfalls and setbacks and mistakes, but it's a journey worth taking because you take it together. He says they still argue about being on the station, but it's all right because at the end of the day, they still love each other, and that's all that matters. For a show that doesn't understand women in the slightest, this is a very sweet sentiment and a very sweet view of marriage.
Yeah.
Though we could easily go back to discussing why they would have moved here with no plan for Keiko, and anyway, you know, there's still that.
Yeah, the effect it had on Keiko's career as a botanist.
Yes, but I'll let it go because, you know, this was very sweet. It's almost like it sort of explains to, like you said, why do they stay together? And this is why. It's still the journey for them. And that's actually a pretty adult view of marriage that, yeah, you're going to have your ups and your downs. But the point is you're doing it all together.
It's not idyllic.
Right. For example, we might bicker about this show, but you know.
What do you?
Everything's fine.
What do you mean might?
Well, I mean, when the show has been really bad, like in Rules of Acquisition,
oh, I'm just kidding.
We were pretty much in agreement.
I'm just kidding.
I know. So Julian tells Miles that he needs to rest.
I'm sure he just doesn't want to hear any more about marriage.
Oh, God. Maybe. Sisko's looking around the room where the fake accident happened. He asks some questions about the data clip and whether it had been altered before she saw it. She asks, why would it be altered? Good question. I thought for a moment here that she didn't know, and that maybe it was just the other aliens who were involved here. But she says the Talani and the Calarans have finally made peace, and that peace won't survive if they don't trust each other.
Interesting.
And then at that moment, Dax calls asking Sisko to come to the Ganges.
I question why Sisko didn't take Odo along with him if he thought there needed to be any kind of investigation, because Odo's so good at that.
Yeah, that is a good point. They really should have brought Odo.
Or maybe it was because Odo isn't politically very sensitive and you are dealing with ambassadors to a race.
But it also might just fall back to that thing you said earlier, which is they spent their effects budget. I don't know.
Okay, good point.
But yeah, you're right. Because they needed to investigate something, they absolutely should have brought Odo. Well, over in the Ganges, Dax says someone erased 5 seconds from the computer log, leaving behind traces of a remote transport command. First of all, how on earth did somebody else update your logs? Oh my God, no security.
Yeah, they need to work on security. If somebody who's not part of the Federation can get on board your shuttle and erase logs.
Yep, and just erase it. Right.
She does look very pleased with herself, though.
She was very pleased.
And she was doing some sciencey stuff for a change?
Yes, she's always happy when she's doing sciencey stuff. I also wondered how there could be traces of a remote command. It's all very hand-wavy, this scene.
Yeah, either there's stuff in the log or there isn't stuff in the log.
Exactly. It's like in the log we saw a word, remote. Oh, wait. Well, according to the timestamps, the request was made, this request for a remote transport, was made a full 3 minutes after the supposed accident. This gets Sisko very excited that something is going on.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, down on the planet, Miles is fading fast. He's not looking good. Julian is giving him some kind of hypo spray to try and help.
He looks like Odo gets when he starts melting.
He does look very melty. Miles asks if he's talked to the ballerina since he left Earth, and he says no. Then they hear someone coming, and Bashir prepares himself for attack. But when they see it's the Talani ambassador, he relaxes. But oh, bad idea, because the Kalaran ambassadors and some armed thugs are right behind her.
Big reveal, she was in on it.
Yeah, we learned the plan was to destroy the harvesters and eliminate everyone who could have recreated them. So this is where I also wonder, why are we talking not shooting? You don't have to tell them the plan, just shoot them. The T'lani ambassador says she's sorry, but they can have the consolation of knowing that their deaths were for a noble cause. And then I see the reason why she doesn't just shoot. She actually backs away, leaving others to do the dirty work of the shooting for her.
Oh, and I didn't notice that.
She did.
Well, all I can say is, unless you're a Klingon, dying for a noble cause isn't much of a consolation.
No, gosh. And then we go to an ad break.
I guess we discover here that they're not actually evil, that they aren't trying to restart the war.
Right. That's true.
In a very misguided way, they're trying to actually do something good.
Yeah. Something drastic, I guess.
Yeah.
And destructive, which I suppose if you've really been in centuries-long wars, then maybe that's the way you think all the time.
Yeah, this is something I thought they missed expanding upon in this episode of maybe how destructive the war was.
Mm.
I mean, we see this planet that's been destroyed, and everybody on it was killed by these harvesters.
Supposedly, yeah.
So I'm wondering if they could have expanded on how destructive it was to this society and how the harvesters and the information is so horrendous to them that they need to destroy it, that it needs to be erased from history.
Right.
Also, if you notice, the three soldiers at the front are all women. So I was wondering, maybe they volunteered. Can we shoot the creepy guy who's been hitting on us all week?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. You can lead.
Oh, man. After the ad break, the T'lani ambassador is about to give the order to fire when Miles asks for help up. He says he wants to die on his feet, which I thought he couldn't feel his legs, so I don't know how he's standing up. He says, it's been an honor serving with you to Julian.
It's at that point I think Miles is clearly delirious, and Julian realizes how sick he really is.
But before they can fire, guess what happens? They get beamed out. Totally Star Trek. Yes, just in time. So Sisko and Dax save the day.
This is proof of the old Eli Wallach statement. When you have to shoot, shoot. Don't talk.
Exactly. When they get to the shuttle, Julian says, we have to get Chief O'Brien back to the station or he'll be dead within the hour. I don't know how he knows that. This is where time goes foggy, right? Because even Bajor is like 6 hours or something from the station. So where are they? Anyway, Julian says, they're killing everyone involved in destroying the harvesters. The T'lani cruiser is hailing them as they try to get away. Ignore them, Sisko says, and send out a distress call on all Federation subspace frequencies. But they're blocking comms and somehow blocking all sensors, which is of particular interest to Sisko. They take off and the music gets dramatic as the cruiser follows them. The bad guys fire a warning shot, which results in Sisko hailing them to say firing on this vessel means you've committed an act of war in the Federation. The T'lani ambassador says, we have no quarrel with you or the Federation, but you must turn over Dr. Bashir and Chief O'Brien.
Federation citizens and Starfleet personnel?
Yes.
That's a little much. That falls under, yes, that's a declaration of war.
Right. So finally they do explain this to Sisko and they say they believe the threat remains as long as the knowledge exists. The T'lani ambassador says, we know this is painful for you and it wasn't easy for us to order the deaths of our own people, but it is necessary. Sisko asks if they're willing to kill him as well, and apparently they are. They tell Sisko he has 1 minute. Which, 1 minute for what? Oh my god, that makes me crazy when they do that. Just destroy the shuttle.
When you have to shoot, shoot, don't talk. Fortunately, none of them have seen the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah. Sisko hangs up and turns the shuttle directly at them. They're surprised that he would even try this maneuver, and they fire on the shuttle, destroying it.
Well, they knew he was going to do a straight power play.
They should have known if they had watched any of the other episodes. But, of course, they realize the other runabout is missing. Oops! Forgot there were two shuttles. But we did lose a shuttle here anyway, and Sisko does lose a lot of them. I'd be concerned about a Federation auditor turning up and asking questions about the state of the shuttles.
So how many shuttles do you go through a quarter?
Well, back on the station, Miles is recovering in the infirmary with Keiko by his side. He's looking at a coffee cup that Molly painted for him. Bashir comes in and he says he really appreciated when Miles said it was an honor serving with him. He says he feels the same way. When he keeps babbling, Miles chases him away, telling Keiko it was hell being trapped with him because he never stops talking, which is probably true.
Well, it was another classic example of Julia not picking up on the signals. I mean, he's talking about how close they get when they could have died together. And it's like, Keiko is right there. I don't think this is a good conversation.
It's not a good time to have that conversation, for sure. But also, here I thought maybe Miles was going to say he didn't remember, like he was delirious or something from the fever, but he didn't.
That would have been funny. What did I say? I have no memory of that.
I was sure that's what was going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, after Julian leaves, Miles holds up the coffee cup and says he wouldn't mind a cup of coffee. And Keiko says, "You never drink coffee in the afternoon." And he says, "Sure I do." And Keiko is shocked. And she's like, "You do?" The end. Oh my God, I laughed so hard.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. That
best
did make me laugh.
Ending of any of the episodes we watched. It was just classic.
That was a very good one.
Okay, well, we have reached the end of this episode. Do you have any over-analysis?
Yes, I do. I have several things I want to talk about.
Okay, let's see if they overlap with mine.
Okay, well, the first thing is, I think it was really poor hazmat protocol that they weren't wearing full isolation suits.
Oh my God, they didn't even have gloves on. They're like picking up those canisters.
Yeah.
Gosh.
They're handling this extraordinarily dangerous bioweapon.
So
and they're just, handling it openly. Just bad procedure.
Well, and when those guys come in with guns, the doctor, the Dilbert hair doctor, he's like, "There's no weapons allowed in here." Well, then you should have done something to stop them from being weapons coming in there. Yeah, there were just no safety protocols. It was very strange.
Well, I assume that all the safety protocols were overridden because Sharat and the other ambassador had planned all of this. That this was a carefully planned and executed mission.
Yeah, I guess so.
The second thing is, and this is just really an observation, how good a weapon are these harvesters if Bashir can cure Miles so quickly?
Yeah, that's one of my notes, exactly. There's two things. One is it requires skin contact.
Yeah.
And it's not contagious. And then, they get Miles back to the station and he's cured in 5 minutes. I don't know. That was a little silly.
Well, what I wondered there was perhaps the harvesters weren't tuned for human physiology.
Hmm.
So they just made Miles sick.
Okay.
And took a long time to work while the harvesters maybe figured out
that's good
how to kill humans. And it just made Miles pretty sick in the meantime.
Well, and maybe some of this work they'd been doing had helped him figure out.
So he'd understood
what worked. I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Maybe Julian had a good handle on how they worked. So could cure them fairly quickly.
No, I like that. I think that's a fair explanation that they were built for destruction of the other alien race, not for humans.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good headcanon.
Okay, next point.
Mm-hmm.
One of the problems is if a society reaches a point technologically where it could create biogenic weapons that worked really well, you're not putting that genie back in the bottle.
Exactly.
Even if you destroy the plans for that specific weapon and the knowledge of the people who understood how it worked, you still have knowledge of genetics and nanotechnology or whatever. That would still exist. So somebody could recreate a weapon like it.
Yeah, and it seems difficult to believe that there would only be one type.
Yeah.
That somebody hadn't created their own in their own lab somewhere and that there were all kinds of different versions of this. And
Yeah,
that was very easy. Too easy.
Right. It's like looking at chemical weapons. The U.S. gave up chemical weapons in the 90s, but the underlying chemistry of how all those things work is still well understood. So I would see a similar problem there.
And I think even worse now in 2020, as we see how quickly something contagious can spread around the entire world.
Oh, yeah. When you get, massively interconnected world. Yes.
Right. And so how quickly could something spread in space travel?
Yeah.
I don't know, but
And I think my final point is we didn't learn enough about the races that fought this war.
Yeah.
They sort of hinted at they'd fought this very long war in the harvesters. And I touched on this earlier. I wanted to see how destructive the war was, maybe, or how horrific things were, that they would go to these extreme lengths.
Yeah.
Maybe even show that homeworld were destroyed, that the spaceships, the cruisers that they had, and that was pretty much what was left of the race. And they were in a rebuilding phase because they'd almost wiped themselves out. That, to me, would have made a little more sense in the story.
I do think sometimes when you have these sort of 46-minute bite-sized chunk stories, that there's a thing you're trying to do. Like, my guess is they're trying to put Julian and Miles together to advance that relationship a little bit, although I don't think they advanced it too much.
Yeah.
But if they're trying to do that and they're sort of coming up with a reason to do that, they're more focused on that and on the other part of it of, you know, Sisko and Dax going to rescue than they are on what the larger story is.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a good example of something that could have easily been a 2 or 3-parter as we looked more into those races and we learned about the war and we learned about the other things that have gone on and the destruction that they've caused. But instead, that's not what the focus was.
Yeah.
The focus was much smaller. It's hard, I think, when you're trying to write that. You sort of choose what it is that you're focusing on and what's important to your story.
Yeah, you could have done a much bigger cat and mouse kind of story on the planet with Miles and Bashir evading the T'Lani forces.
Yeah. This could have been a long story arc, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I could have seen this as an entire, like, modern day season. Like an 8-episode arc or something.
Yeah, it could have been a mini-series.
Yeah, it could have been a mini-series, yeah. You have to kind of be willing to give up some of those details when you've only got 46 minutes.
Yeah, it's so true.
But it makes it a little anemic, so I understand you.
And I think my final point, and this is what you said, I question the viability of a weapon that could only be transmitted by actual physical contact.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be better if it could be aerosol dispersed? But I guess we didn't cover any of those things.
No, but you know what? You could be right. It maybe worked differently on those two races. Maybe it was something that they could have just breathed in and, you know, caused them more damage than it did with the humans.
Right.
So I guess that's possible. And you should probably extend that to the whole story if that's the case.
Yeah, I think you're right. That's a very good point.
I was confused about why they didn't just destroy that whole room. I don't know. It didn't make a ton of sense. If all of the harvesters were located in that one room...
And all the people who knew about it.
And all the people, yeah, I don't know.
If you were that worried, I would actually go one stage further and say, if everybody who knew about the harvesters or understood them were all on that one ship, destroy that one ship.
Yeah.
I mean, detonate its warp core. Do something like that. I mean, make sure there is nothing left of it.
Yeah. Send it into a star.
Yeah. Oh, perfect.
Totally agree.
Well, that wraps it up for me. Do you have anything?
The only thing I have, I mean, you actually covered all of my points, so I'll skip all of mine, except for the last one, which was, what do you think happened after this? Did they continue to go after Julian and Bashir? I mean, did they have cause to? What happened to these ambassadors? Were they held accountable for their actions? I mean, I was curious about what happened next, because it just was like, oh, the end. Everybody's fine. They're back on the station.
Well, I would assume that the ambassadors were authorized to do this, that this was not something that they did on their own remit, that this
Good
had
point.
Agreement within the leadership of both of the races.
But they're going to have to answer to their people.
Yes. But at the same time, I think the hint of how destructive this war was, they might say, look, everybody who knew about this, we've erased all the information. Sorry we had to do it, but it was important. And if you survived this war, perhaps the people went, oh, thank God. Okay, we're with you. It's fine.
Okay, sure.
I think the other side is, as they were ambassadors and clearly political, they could take the stance that, well, we blew up the Federation shuttle with the two people on it who understood how these things worked. And that's good enough. And we're not going to ask the Federation about what happened to them, etc. So if you like, they play the politics game of they have enough evidence to support their story without it necessarily being true.
Right. Okay.
And they're not members of the Federation.
No.
So they could probably get away with it.
I think they will struggle to get into the Federation now. But yeah.
Yes, it might be difficult. But at the same time, we don't know, like I said, the whole planet, their systems could be completely decimated by this.
That's true. Yeah, we don't know enough.
Right.
Okay.
Maybe that's part of the reason why they didn't blow up the ship. This is one of the few ships they have left.
That's possible. Yeah, that's a really good point. Well, okay, that was all I had for overanalysis. If we go to women in the future, there's not a lot to say. I would only say that Keiko accidentally found Miles and Julian were alive. Sort of stumbled into that. Dax was smart enough to track down the clues, which was great. The Talani ambassador was really good.
Yeah.
You know, not much else really happened around character development. Fortunately, there wasn't any sexual harassment. So I guess it all balances out.
Do you think that with Keiko, there was sort of it was making kind of a joke of, it doesn't matter how well you know your partner. There's still things where you go, really? You drink coffee in the afternoon?
I wouldn't be surprised to find out that you drink coffee in the afternoon. I think you drink coffee and tea all day long, and night.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But like back in the old days when, you know, we would leave the house to go to work, we wouldn't be together 24 hours a day, so you wouldn't necessarily know what I was doing. Maybe I was drinking coffee in the afternoon.
Smoking and doing shots in the afternoon with your coworkers.
Well, that kind of thing you might find out about. But I actually think that was a pretty accurate thing that would happen.
Yeah.
Like, you think you know everything, and then you're like, wait, what? I don't know. I thought it was cute. I didn't think it was like an insult or anything of Keiko.
No.
Yeah, it felt real.
I thought it was just sort of a joke about that kind of thing that happens where you are like, wait a minute, you like that?
Well, it's not the kind of thing you would necessarily discuss what you're doing at work all day. That, oh yeah, I had 7 cups of coffee. Well, you might if it keeps you up. But I guess if not, if it's just your normal thing and it's boring, it's not something that would come up. Yeah, I don't know. It seemed like a thing that could happen.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I don't doubt that. I wouldn't disagree with that.
Okay, well then let's go to rating. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral? What is your rating?
I am giving this a thumbs up because it had lots of great Star Trek elements in it. I enjoyed the special effects. I love seeing some other ships. Those were really kind of cool. And I like the whole story arc. I mean, I would love to see something like a story like this expanded.
Yeah.
But overall, I think it was an enjoyable story and I did enjoy it.
I would also give it a thumbs up. I think my only real criticism, apart from the things we talked about, is that I would love to have seen them, again, do a better job of advancing the relationship between Julian and Bashir. At the very least, they had to work together, which was nice. But I would have liked to have seen a little bit more there because I still miss the teamwork aspect. At the same time, Dax and Sisko just heading over there and solving the problem. I like that. So, thumbs up. Very Star Trek-y.
Indeed.
Okay, well, this was a good episode. Brings us to the end of Lucky Number 13. So come back next week for episode 14. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own overanalysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there on individual episodes, and you can also listen to all of the other awesome podcasts in our network.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it from me.